Nikki.
Hey,
Nick.
Oh.
How are you?
Oh, very. Yeah, I'm okay. How are you doing?
Not bad.
Good.
So what are you guys up to? You look very nice today. All smart and dressed.
You like our uniforms?
I feel like, yeah, I do. I'm still trying to decide which pants I like best, but I, you know what? On second thoughts, I think I like the old ones better. I'm on Al's book.
You can patronize the old guy. That's okay.
I figure.
You know, more coke these days, or?
No, I'm doing very little coke. This is what my major problem is, cocaine.
Do you mind if I take your picture?
Yeah, okay. You can have like pictures, sweetheart.
I've carried a camera with me throughout my entire career, right? Off and on, and by showing little vignettes down here, little frozen images of the skids about how the life is down here, what the lifestyle is like, and show them to the kids, then it's a powerful medium which to present a message.
That's what she does, okay? Drug addicts will inject wherever they can. Okay, there's this young lady, her name's Shannon. Is she a drug addict?
No.
She's 18 years old, down there in the downtown east side in front of a bar at midnight. How do you know she's not a drug addict?
She looks clean.
Yeah, she's clean looking. What does a drug addict look like?
A bum.
Bum, down at her, right? Yeah, she looked like, looked like any of you kids, right? Mm-hmm. And this is her 6 months later. Same girl, 6 months later. What do you think's going on with her now? Yeah, she's on the needle now. Now she's a drug addict. She didn't know that she had an addictive personality before. She does now.
You know, talk to the addicts down here, ask them, say, did you intend on being a drug addict? Everybody will say, well, hell no, I was just down here to party for a while, or just using it to mask the pain, and now they're in a living hell. So that's the message we want to get out to kids. And then, of course, recently taking a video camera down here and having addicts themselves telling kids what it's like in their own words. We're out filming one of the first days we're out, and we saw this man just seated in an alcove, and I immediately recognized from the paleness of his face that he was in an overdose state.
What's the matter, Nicola?
This idiot says I took his fucking cigarettes. Goddamn goose.
For another disturbance at 320.
Hey, you, buddy, mind your own fucking business. He's a trick. Move out of the area. People like you, we don't go for.
Probably got a point, guys. Go.
Take off, guys.
He was in an overdose of heroin and possibly some cocaine. He stopped breathing just as the ambulance showed up. And they had to bag him, put an airway in him, help him breathe, give him the Narcan, and it took him a full 5 minutes to come around.
Breathe. Big breaths. Sit up.
There you go.
Sit up. Take the thing out of your mouth with your hand. There you go. Oh, boy.
The hell did that get in there?
Good.
Back from the dead, sir. The Odd Squad Society is a group of 7 Vancouver police officers. We've all had time on the beat, and we all were motivated by seeing young people down in this area who had absolutely no idea of exactly where they were going with their drug experimentation and drug use.
It's our goal to provide young people with real life images and information about the effects of hardcore drugs, allowing them to make their own choices about drug use.
Sure. Chipping. Just chipping.
Drug addiction, cocaine and heroin abuse is rampant down here. There's a lot of social and health issues related to it. We're in a unique position because we deal with this stuff on a frontline basis every single day, that we can bring some of our world to the public and hopefully they can glean some information out of it.
I'm getting raped.
having a bad trip. Bad trip, girl.
Oh, this isn't.
This won't be on TV? How come?
Yeah, I have a report from the adult caller
passing by. Well, we're trying to show these to young kids and keep them off the dope, eh? And this is a prime example why you shouldn't be on dope.
Yeah.
I met Darlene when she's having a cocaine psychosis on the street, a major episode where somebody's fixed cocaine into her neck, and then she was freaking out on the street. And literally, cocaine makes people very paranoid. She must have had a very strong dose, and she thought people were out to kill her, including ourselves. We were in plainclothes at the time, but we showed her a badge, the radio, and she thought that we were out making a snuff movie or something, you know. So she was quite frightened, very disoriented, and that's one of the side effects of cocaine. Where are you from, Darlene?
I was born in Toronto, and my parents were born there, and both dysfunctional addicts. Both my parents were alcoholics. I know for sure that my mother was a heroin addict. I mean, I grew up all my life not knowing why she was always sleeping until I was 16 watching the documentary when I seen them showing a junkie, you know, tying their arm up. That was my mother. And I went, oh my God, that's why she was like that. You know, but there's a time in your life, like myself, when you realize that it's time to grow up and face reality that, you know, yeah, you're in pain and it hurts. And the drugs that I don't do them because I like to do them. I do them because I'm in pain. And it numbs the pain.
I don't really want to hold her down. We're going to get you to the hospital, okay?
It's death. It's a death. It's a death wish, you know? All that, you know, when you take the drugs, all that is going to end up, either you're going to go to jail or you're going to die. You know, young girls, they end up on the corners to buy their dope, and the dope ends up supporting the drug dealer on the corner, the male drug dealer, or they end up with a pimp, they end up with AIDS, which is all death wishes, you know?
Right now we're at the intersection of Maine and Hastings. This is the epicenter of what's commonly referred to as Skid Row, but what most people now call downtown Eastside. And this is where the majority of our work is done, is in this block as beat officers. That's because the rooming houses, the major ones, are located here. There is a concentration of bars here. And there's a concentration of street people here, all down this block. Any time of the day or night, you can usually find a drug deal or drug transaction going on in this immediate area. There's been stabbings, there's been other serious crimes that have happened here on a regular basis, and it's usually over something as cheap as a $10 piece of crack or heroin.
This is a crime scene where a man and a woman are having a domestic dispute. The man shot himself in the head in front of his girlfriend. He was taken to VGH Hospital. At this time, we don't know his prognosis. What happened to John tonight? Tell me.
John shot himself in the face tonight. Right in front of me. I don't know if he's going to live or die. And that's what I'm getting ready to do right now, is getting ready to go out to the hospital and find out what's going on. John is a recovering heroin addict. And he's on the methadone program. He wanted drugs tonight. And he was thinking nasty things, like crime and stuff. Which, obviously brings out the gun, you know. So we were fighting about that. I told him, like, you know, you don't need to do that shit, right? And he knows that too. You know, he wants to get a job. He wants to get off. He wants to get clean. I want to get clean. We both want to be clean. We don't want this. This isn't it, you know.
When I first met Carly, she had just called 911 and The police and the ambulance were there, and they were just taking John away when I met Carly. She, at first she said that, no, I don't want to be interviewed. Why would you want to interview me? Then I explained that, look, it's to keep kids away from addiction of cocaine and addiction of heroin. And she right away said, yeah, I'll do that.
What is that in your...
This is from drugs that were bad, and they had a strange cut in them which caused people to start hallucinating and see things. So whenever I did drugs, things would come out of my arm, and I would pick at them and pull them, and that's the results of me pulling the bugs out of my arms.
No,
I've had 2 skin grafts on it so far. And I was living down in the skids at the time, so it wouldn't take because I kept using in there.
What do you mean using?
Well, doing drugs in it when it was trying to heal.
You'd stick your hypodermic needle full of drugs in there?
Yeah, I'd say this is my needle with my drugs. I'd be sticking it in there. And I would do that, and then I'd start picking at it again. So I just ended up pulling all the skin grafts off again, because I started seeing the bugs again. But anybody who starts to go use drugs, just go look at this tape and look at my arm. See the scars?
Can we see those scars? Is that from the same thing as what's on your arm?
This is the same thing that's on my arm. I don't see you see that. And that one's not too bad, but this one was very, very deep, as you can see. And the thing that you guys just saw me wrap up is what these were.
A lot of the drug activity takes place in these lanes. A lot of people come down here to fix if they don't live in the area. There's needle wrappers all around, there's bleach bottles, there's condoms, there's signs of pathetic wasted lives. How are you doing there? What are you doing? Okay. And it's no mystery that you have a lot of disease being spread around when people either have no fixed address or that come into the area or fixing in the lane, sometimes using this water, sharing needles. We walk through the lanes and it's like a blue tide. We just move through the lanes and flush out all the bodies. The people fixing in here and they're back 5 minutes later doing the same thing. How are you? You smoking a little bit of crack? What do you got in your left hand there? Other hand. Other left hand. Maybe you got a bit of heroin, eh? Yeah, you want to just wipe it off? Turn your pocket inside out there, partner. No, this pocket here. You got needles on you anywhere there? No? So what were you gonna do, chase the dragon there? You smoking a bit of heroin? Okay, why don't you move on, partner? That's the type of thing that's happening all the time down here. Really tragic, pathetic, wasted lives once you get hooked on this crap.
When I first started working down here, they were just all addicts, hypes, and trash, garbage, essentially. Just a waste of society's monies and taxpayers' dollars. And in a lot of sense, I don't blame people for thinking that about these people either. But when you get to know a little bit about these people and their stories, you can't help but have compassion for them. These people have mothers and fathers that love them just like we love our children.
Nicola. How are you making out there, Nicola?
Okay, what? Just wondering, it looks like you got some tent pegs, eh?
Yeah. Who are you guys?
It's us.
Oh, it's you guys. Hey, can you guys loan me a few bucks so I can get something to eat, please? I am faint with hunger. This welfare lady came by and she said she was gonna go get me some money and she never came back.
Well, 15 is when I started my drug use. But I was playing with Barbie dolls up until the time I was about 13 or 14 years old. I was like very fairly immature kid. Like I was spoiled. I had my own horse.
The way she describes it is she said the first time she did it, she was hooked.
It was like a fun lifestyle, I thought. Like going to the expensive restaurants and having money to burn. Like thousands of dollars.
Someone showed her the upside of drugs. Essentially, what you see on Hollywood, the nice fancy cars, the parties, the dresses, the whole nine yards. And when this guy's use for her had worn out, she ended up supporting her habit by prostituting herself, as most women addicts do. The quality of life just keeps going down and down, and from being a high-track prostitute to living in Skid Row, it just takes a matter of time.
There really isn't any happiness down here. This is misery. This is slavery. I'm a slave to a drug.
When you get that drug, is that a form of happiness, or is that just a, you know, another lost battle?
Well, I suppose it's a form of happiness. It's a form of, you fulfilled your goal, which was to get this. But it's almost once you've got it in your hand, you're already thinking, my God, I'm going to do this and then I'm going to need another one.
Who has an addictive personality and who doesn't? Maybe somebody could try cocaine a little while and quit. And I've had other drug addicts say, no, you do cocaine or heroin once, you are hooked. And I think these are people who have highly addictive personalities, and who knows who those people are. I understand you just got out.
Yeah, I just got released from, I'd been in jail since May out at Mount Thurston in Chilliwack. I just got released that day.
You're right in the corner here.
Yeah, that
was... And it looked like you were sleeping, but you had your mouth wide open, and it was like you were looking up.
Really?
Then I looked at the color of your face, it didn't look right, so I stopped.
I was alone?
Yeah, you're all by yourself. You had a really rapid pulse and a really shallow breathing.
Right.
And then just as the ambulance came up, you just gave a little bit of a shudder and you stopped breathing.
That incident didn't seem to make a lot of difference after. After that, I still went into my, like, I continued in my active addiction.
Yeah, went into the battle. Did you fix again that night?
Yeah, cocaine.
Cocaine.
And that went on for about 6 weeks. Couldn't handle it anymore. Sick, like, physically, mentally, emotionally, everything. Really wanted to change, really wanted to stop, wanted to quit. So I phoned Detox.
Are you still in contact with any of your family members?
My mom. My mom is about all. But I stay in contact sort of, like I find out about everybody else through my mom.
Yeah, I guess you haven't shared with your mom the seriousness of your
problem? Yeah, the seriousness of it I have. Like she knows I've been to treatment and stuff like that.
Not this overdose in the summertime?
Like she knows a lot, but just not every single detail. But on the most part, she knows. Like
mother's worry.
My mother worries like I just left home yesterday at 18 years old. I'm 34 now, and she does still worry about me like I left home yesterday for the first time. Like, which
well, you're
I'm
still
glad
her kid.
Because, yeah.
What happened at the hospital?
Well, at the hospital, I guess he died later on that night. I don't know what time or anything. But when I went and saw him the second time, he was, his breathing was getting a lot worse and his head was swollen right up and he was bruising and everything. So I guess they took me out to my grandma's place and my brother was there and my sister and my mom and my stepdad. And so it was really good support for me, you know, everybody was there. And
is this?
And that's me there with Santa. I don't know what year that was, but...
You were, what, 8 there?
Yeah, probably about that, yeah.
Yeah, and you're 28 now?
Yeah.
I don't think anything has affected me more than looking at those family pictures. I realized then that each one of the people down here has past and they'll have futures. They may come from broken families, but a lot of people come from good, strong upbringing families. They've just made the wrong choice. They've got into drugs. They've got into heavy alcohol abuse. And with Carly that day, I watched and I saw that she, when she was young, did the same things I did. Went on camping trips, went with family outings.
See, these are all my mom. You can see the way I grew up, pools in the backyard and everything. This isn't my lifestyle, right? This isn't the way I was raised to be. I just got into the dope and, he just got caught up in everything, right? And ended up down here.
I've turned into a bit of a softy in terms of dealing with some of these people. I was a lot more hard-nosed when I first came out, and concepts seemed a lot clearer when I was out of the academy and on the street here, basically, law enforcement. Heavy emphasis on the enforcement. But the courts here treat possession not as a criminal, but rather a social issue. And now I understand that there's a hell of a lot more to policing. If you want to police a neighborhood, you want to take ownership in it, you want to become part of the solution, you have to look beyond just going out there and enforcing the law and the rescue 911 cops crap. It's a part of our job. Don't get me wrong, we have to do it. And we have to protect the public from some of the criminals out there. But there's a lot more to policing. So I've softened up a bit, and I've taken time to get to know some of the people down here, even if they are quote-unquote criminals.
Can you believe that? I'd be amazed at what I find in the garbage. You'd be absolutely amazed.
What have you found today? Anything?
Oh, I just find kids' toys and stuff, but there was just a nice army jacket. I would like to give it to you.
This
is perfect for you.
I call the shots. That's good.
Would you ever wear it?
I probably would. You need some clothes there, Nicola. You hang on to it. Your legs bugging you, is it, Randy?
Yeah, that's why I'm moving around like this. I stand still. The pain goes directly to one spot in my leg, and I can't handle this pain.
Can you show us what's wrong with your leg? And how did that start?
Just a little cut like that.
Just a little cut?
Yeah. That's a cut. I don't know how it carried on,
It was only not even hours before a citizen flagged me over when I was in the lane and said there was somebody in trouble on the street. I went down, I saw Randy, and I've seen him like that dozens of times. It's brutal for somebody who doesn't know what's going on.
Are you okay, Randy?
Pardon me?
Are you okay?
Ask him.
Randy's one of our subjects. We're following him over a period of time in Skid Row here. So he just shot up with cocaine and heroin. That's why he's acting like that.
He's at about 110, 120.
Excuse me.
So how long have you known Randy?
I'd say I've known him for about 5 or 6 years.
Just a few months.
And what do you think his condition was today?
Normal. Typical. I've seen him a lot worse. I've seen him in that condition a lot.
Yeah.
I'm surprised he's alive.
Randy's a survivor. At 40, I'd say he's probably one of the oldest addicts down here, both age and length down in the area. He's been down here for probably about 10 years. And he's a hardcore addict, and he lives on the streets, and there's very few that can actually live on the streets and live with an addiction for that length of time.
Did you hear what I said? Yeah.
Well, I am not.
Where did you get
home? Working on this drug awareness project, you've sort of become attached to the various subjects that we've chosen to chronicle down here, because you get you have to get to know their life in detail, and you realize that, geez, they're doing a wonderful service to the community by providing us access to their life and filming their hellish existence down here and talking about their sad and painful stories down here. And they have nothing to give monetarily back to the community. But this is one way that they feel they can make a difference.
I already went all through this. But
so this is your dirty work?
For instance, I mean, this sweater, there's nothing wrong with that sweater. I mean, it's not the most fashionable. There's books, and I don't like books being thrown away. That I'm pretty sure that's gold. Look at it.
Okay, Nicola, we bump into you from time to time.
Do we?
Yes.
Bump? Ow, yeah! Assault by a public.
Okay. We bump into you from time to time, but we don't really know what you do, like, on a full day. What's your regular routine on
well,
a full day?
Unfortunately, I am not doing anything illegal, so I've been reduced to panhandling. And people are becoming very callous and cold-hearted because there's too many people panhandling, and there are just simply too many security guards pushing too many people further and further into the corner.
Well, how much do you make when you go out and panhandle?
Very little. It's very dependent upon people's moods. And sometimes I can go out there, and for 2 hours, everybody will say no.
What do you say? Like, pretend I'm a tourist that you're panhandling to, or a normal person. What would you say to me?
Oh, excuse me, sir. I am, I have nowhere to stay. I've been sleeping outside, and I'm hungry, and I'm cold. Could you please spare a dollar or any change? Please.
Okay, you convinced me. Here, that's all I got.
But no, I don't believe you. If I turn you upside down and shake you, anything I find is mine.
It's yours. What does it cost you for a hit?
$10.
What does it cost you for a day?
Depends. I mean, you can, you can never get enough. So, never.
On your cheapest day, what can you get by with as far as drugs go?
$10 an hour.
And that's waking hours, and you're awake, what, 12 hours a day? So you're looking at $120. And
yeah.
What about the expensive end? What's the most you've spent down here on a day?
Probably $600.
It's a lot of money, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, it's ridiculous. It's absolutely insane.
Talked to different beat officers that have been down here for 10 years and they say that they haven't burnt out. You talk to other guys that have been down here for 2 or 3 years and they're burnt out. I think it's very individualistic to the officer. It's your attitudes towards this place. Our partnerships, the guys we work with, and if it wasn't for good guys to work with, there's no way you could work down in this area.
Nikki.
Yes.
How are you?
What?
How are you doing? Did you stay dry last night?
No, I'm soaking wet. I'm hungry. I'm cold. It
was pretty stormy,
cold.
Eh?
Cold.
Yeah.
Just old.
Hey, what exactly is this?
It's a buggy. It's a big buggy. Are you guys filming all this? Me waking up?
Yeah.
Oh, God, you're awful.
You been staying here for a while, Nikki, or...?
What?
You've been staying here for a while?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So everybody's gonna put in a bit of a donation for me, are you guys, please?
What do you wanna do?
I'm gonna look to backpackers right now. I've been trying to get into detox. I can't get it.
Yeah.
It's just
what
hopeless.
Happened with methadone?
Anything? Methadone. I can never stay there long enough to, I mean, it's like I go down there. Twice I've been there and I wait for half an hour then. Can't stay in.
Can we get you something to eat or something?
Well, I'd rather if you gave me some money, maybe a few bucks or
why don't you come with us for a bowl of soup there?
No, because I want to go up to the hall. I certainly didn't know when I was 15 years old and that somebody stuck the first needle in my arm that it was as addictive as it is. And I mean, it was a joke. It was a game. And I mean, I had a 39-year-old inject me with the first shot of cocaine I ever had when I was 15 years old. And I swear to God, if anybody did that to my kid now, I'd probably have their fingers broken once a week and continually do it. And once they, when they healed up, do it again. I mean, that's just the way I feel.
So
I
don't... this guy actually stuck the first needle in your arm. Was that the first time you used drugs? Was it actually intravenously?
Absolutely, yep.
How old are you, Nicola?
40 years old. And I've used drugs since I was 15. And I've got pretty 2 years in that whole time, if we total up the straight time, 2 years that I've been straight out of that 40. So I've used drugs for more than half of my life.
When did your parents find out you were using drugs?
My mother started getting suspicious because I left home for longer than I was supposed to. My marks in school went right down the toilet. And then she found me in Deep Cove in a house, and she was looking through the windows, and everybody was like passed out, kind of high. And that's when she found out for sure. She put me on a plane to England and took me to England, and we stayed there for a couple of months.
Where in England?
With my relatives down in the south of England. And then she was going to leave me there to go to a private school. And I talked her out of it. I said, no, I'll be fine. I can go back to Vancouver now. And well, I got back here within 3 days, I was back with the same guy.
Yeah, right. So essentially, once they found out, they tried to...
They did everything. I mean, they've sent me around the world. I've been to Hawaii 6 times. I've been to England 6 times. I've been to Greece, Italy, France.
Why don't you think it worked?
I think that you have to get to the point where you really, it's either you're going to die. I mean, I want to. If I had a choice between $1 million and never wanting to do cocaine again, I would choose the never wanting to do cocaine again.
Right.
Like, part of me wants to quit, wants to stop, but I think that I have, it's almost like you have two personalities. Even when I get up in the morning, I don't want to do drugs, but part of me does. Right. And that part overtakes the part that doesn't.
And like it all started off like with curiosity and experimentation and you know, and like I never even heard the word addict or addiction or anything like that until it was all done, like all happened, you know. And everything, like first it was the alcohol, you know, like as a teenager, and then it was the pills and cocaine and heroin, and you know what I mean, like it just progressed, and the addiction progressed, and you know, I was trying more things and doing more things and the frequency more, and you know.
And are you using now?
No, I'm not.
Not chipping?
Nope. Nope. It's been tempting. Not so much to do what I was doing before that, but like, you know, like I just feel like my nerves are really bad and stuff like that. Like, you know, like I've almost been pretty tempted. Like, you know, like if I had a couple of Valium, I would probably take them all, you know?
I thought to myself, you idiot, what the hell are you doing? You're that close to death and you're back down here all over again, because I heard he had got himself cleaned up and he was going through rehab and everything else. And if he's down here, I don't care what he says. He's using again.
You don't want to be zipping you up in a body bag.
No, I don't want to be getting zipped up either.
We got a Christmas gift for you, Nicola, from
the NFK
buyer.
You
don't
look like Santa.
You didn't have a house, so we had to come by our place.
I'm sucking my stomach in. I kind of do look like him a little bit.
You're sucking your stomach in like...
You know somebody does look like me.
Yeah. He wears a girdle.
Hey,
he calls it a bulletproof vest. It's not a bulletproof vest, guy. You fell for that long ago. Oh,
this is from all the guys that are doing the film project.
Can I open it?
You sure can. Fly at it.
Man, oh man. Wow. Thank you, guys. This will be the Christmas present.
Appreciate all your help.
Yeah, an ounce of heroin would be really, really appreciated.
You don't have to guess.
Oh, by the way, you guys don't have any cigarettes today. I am desperate for a cigarette.
Well, you never know what Santa's brought you.
Oh. Right? Oh, my goodness. Oh, God. Santa is a mind reader. There's no flies on Santa Claus, are there? Thank you, Sandy. Wow. Chocolate, the chocolate addict. Oh my God, this is so perfect. I can't believe it. Oh, oh my God. Oh, I love it. I love it. I love it. Thank you guys. You have got You guys have got good taste. You know what? You're going to get a hug.
Okay.
Merry Christmas. And you're getting one, too. I don't care. Merry Christmas. Thank you,
have
guys.
A good Christmas,
this
Nicola.
This is too great. This is everything. You know, every single thing you pick is almost like you picked it for me. How did you know?
It's almost like we know you.
It's almost like you know me.
Well, I'll plan this home so we don't have to chase her down.
How you doing, Miss Norris? Merry Christmas.
This is his favorite album.
Gary. You know Randy Miller?
Yeah.
Have you seen him?
I haven't seen him today.
Okay.
You never know, maybe he's with his family. His brother found him, right?
Let's check that. Here we go.
Dr. Bruce, telephone, please. Dr. Bruce, telephone, please.
Hey, Randy.
Randy.
Oh, hi, guys.
Merry Christmas, man.
Merry Christmas. Got a few things for you.
Got you a Christmas present, man.
Thank you.
You're welcome. How long you been in here?
A couple of days, I think.
A couple of days, yeah. I haven't seen you. We were looking for you.
Yeah.
You want a hand there? How are you dealing with not the
Well,
you
got methadone line.
Oh.
That helps.
That helps a lot.
When I first started working down here, I met Randy right away, and I've known him for 10 years. For the first several years, I just considered him a bit of a street derelict, possibly a lunatic, because I saw him when he was coked out and in a complete disassociative state. But then people started telling me and filling me in on a bit of his background for sports and athletic accomplishments, and I actually couldn't even register that. I mean, it was a phenomenal story to me that he was actually a very talented athlete.
He was an aspiring hockey player as a young man, 16, 17 years old, playing in a very competitive league, possibly looking towards NHL someday. Sounds like he had some problems with his family, specifically maybe his dad, as well as he liked to party.
Do you think that drugs are kind of a slow form of suicide?
Yeah, I think it might be something like that. I mean, I was doing it, and I'd say to myself, well, why am I doing this? Why am I torturing myself? There's got to be a reason. I keep looking into that and thinking, still haven't found the answer.
What was it like, Randy, when we brought your brother down to meet you and you found out for the first time that you had some nephews that you didn't know about?
Well, I like that idea. That was good. Yeah, it was... that was really good. It choked me up because I hadn't seen him in such a long time. I seen the pictures of all the little guys.
Twins?
Yeah, I got three little boys. It's beautiful.
The prognosis for somebody living on the street like Randy has for 10 years is not good. I mean, just to come out of it without HIV or AIDS and hepatitis and live a healthy average age life is almost impossible. But I think Randy might be able to do it with the support of some of the people around him. He seems to have bounced back since his family made a connection with him, his brother and his friends, and have talked to him. So, you know, you always have to have hope.
Come here. Okay,
how are you, darling?
I'm so scared.
Come here.
I know, I'm
come
so here. Scared. Please.
Did you just fix?
No, I did.
Oh, you forgot your shoes.
I can't breathe.
Do you want an ambulance to have a look at you? Okay, I'll tell you what, we're gonna get an ambulance.
Yes, please get one.
Okay.
Yes, I can't breathe. Yes, please.
Johnny, come here. You want these guys to have a look at you?
You've been clean for how many months now?
Five months. And I haven't had any slips whatsoever.
I see you out in the street, stand on the corner, or sometimes I come up to your room. But what was your day-to-day routine down there?
What it was like for me was, I would stay out there, and I wouldn't get high in my room. I wouldn't go in my room. I wouldn't even change my clothes for days at the end. This is at the end. I was, like, you know, robbed for everything I owned. So basically, I'd just do date. I'd do a date. Whatever I got for the date, I'd buy my dope, and I'd keep getting high until no dope is left, right back to another date, buy my dope till no dope is left, right back to another date, did my dope till it was gone, right back to another date. Always doing the dope outside because I was scared to get high inside. And I'd use close to right on Hastings. Usually I'd sit right in the middle of everybody because I was always psychosis thinking that some people were gonna kill me. So I wanted to be close to the police officers so that if something did happen that they'd help me. Because I didn't trust nobody, but I trusted the normal people. I almost have two personalities, I found out, because as a child, what I did was when I was being beaten and I was being molested and abused and watching my mom being beaten and abused and shot, I'd block it out by becoming another person. I was a tough girl, violent, because that's all I seen. And to protect Darlene, I had to be able to take it all. I had to play the role I'm not afraid of nothing and stand up to my father in his meetings. And I tell him, it doesn't hurt, go ahead, hit me again. Because if it couldn't allow it to hurt me, you know? And that's where the problems come in as an addict.
So what happened to your face, Nicola?
I fell off my bike. I think I need to take a break. Is there anywhere that do they have any kind of facilities where you can go out and try out, on the island or?
Well, there's detox facilities, yeah, but, you've been this route before. Are you ready to actually give it a try?
I'm way out of on the island or something.
I think there is, but you have to get a referral from a doctor. Do you want to go down and see DeVlaming today?
That's what I'll do. I'll go down and see DeVlaming.
Do you want to go down with us? We can take you down?
Well, I have a couple of things to do first.
I don't think she's serious about getting off, and I don't think she's serious about getting into a methadone treatment program, but she is looking really, really bad. It's been a year now since we've been following her, and that's the worst I've seen her right now. She's not getting enough heroin and dope to sustain herself properly, and then, coupled with falling off her bike and getting banged up, she looks really bad.
Oh, that's ridiculous. That's scary.
Did you know in your mind that was how you were acting after you had fixed with cocaine?
Not even close to it.
So you've been clean for 4 months now, eh?
Yeah.
And what are the changes that have gone on with you in those 4 months?
Getting down to reality, life. Starting to get to know myself better. Starting to like myself, Thinking about now and the future. Not like before, just thinking about the dope all the time. Things are a lot different now. I got something to shoot for.
You got a girlfriend?
Yeah.
Yikes.
It's scary, eh?
Is Randy Miller headed to suburbia? With a house,
it's a
picket
possible.
Fence,
yeah.
A wife?
Something I never ever thought of before, that's for certain.
I met you, right? 6 years ago.
Can you tell me about what's happening in your life at this point?
I was selling pot, to get money for cigarettes and whatnot, because my aunt was helping me raise my son.
Does that even remind you of you? When you put yourself beside you there?
It's a stranger.
A stranger, right?
Almost, you know.
Yeah, 18 years old there.
For me, seeing these kids come down into the area at 14, 15, 13, and with no appreciation of what's going to happen once they get wired to this crap, is probably the toughest thing. When you see that transformation, it really is depressing.
You know what? I don't have any of those scars.
What was going on in your life at that point in time? Remember when I caught up to you?
I just wanted to die.
You were doing cocaine heavy here?
Both.
Cocaine and heroin? It's a little upsetting to you. It's a tough time in your life. Yeah, I wish that I could have gotten you. You alright? I wish I could have gotten you off the street before that happened to you. That's why I spoke to you, and that's why the message we want to get to the kids is that don't dabble with these drugs. I tried to save you, but you told me later you ran from me.
That was only within 8 months, too.
Yeah, you.
Or
that was five. That was
years.
6 months later. 6 months different. And that's why I think your message is so important. What would you tell kids if they were to come down to the downtown east side and start the gloves? Or start using drugs? What would you say to them?
You're trying to stay alive just so you can get high. You know, when people are trying to kill you and hurt you all the time, like, all you're thinking about is getting dope. You know, you don't even remember your family or anything.
What does your drug use cost you physically?
Physically? Well, I tell you one thing, if I wanted to quit and just leave town, no, I couldn't because I'd die. Because my body, you know, just the physical, medical condition I got myself in, just trying to get away from it, is almost killed me, you know. Mm. Because when it comes out of you, it's poison, you know. You got diarrhea and you're sweating and, you know, you're puking and you can't eat anything and you just, you know, start to quiver away. I mean, my fists were stuck together like this because it's what tinsy they call it. When you're so dehydrated, your body starts eating itself. You know, because I couldn't drink or eat anything, puking and all that.
Where do you see yourself in 5 years from now?
Well, I hope to see myself, you know, with my son in Squamish, or at least far away from, I don't even have to be, I could be next door from downtown, but at least far away in my mind.
It may take a generation, or possibly two, to make drugs unpopular in society. I mean, in the mid-70s, 50% of the adult males were smoking cigarettes. Here it is 30 years later, 25% of the males are smoking cigarettes. And same thing about impaired driving. 30 years ago, I was too drunk to walk home, just had to drive my car. Now, if you have that same conversation, people aren't going to go, ha-ha, yeah, it's really funny. They're going to say, you got a problem, or you're an idiot. So people's the perception about drug use will change in a generation if we work at it hard enough.
I am dying. I gotta get some food into me. I'm hungry. I haven't eaten, you know that? I can't even get money for food.
You've had enough, eh?
I've had enough.
You've been worse than this before?
No, I haven't.
That night we picked you up when it was raining and...
It's psychologically. That's the part that's difficult, honey. It's the psychological shit that you can't take. I can take physical. That I can handle. But it's the psychological abuse I can't take. That's where I'm losing it. I mean, I've got a fairly strong brain, right?
Yeah.
But when you start to weaken in that area, you've had it. You might as well give up. You know?
Well, this is the end of our shooting here.
Good. I hope you got something good. When do you think this movie's going to come out? And is there going to be a premiere and everything like that?
Yeah, you'll be invited.
Well, I would certainly hope so, because I want to get my teeth done and I want to get a nice dress. Now, do you think they would spring for a dress?
A dress? Yeah. Probably find a good dress.
No, but I mean, we're getting spring for a new dress, like a new pretty dress, like within reason. Do you think they might be able to do that? It would be so nice.
They might be able to fix you up to something.
A dress and underpants and my nails done, you know, those fakey nails. I mean, there's got to be a way to cover it in the budget, isn't there?
I don't know.